Thank you so much for joining us today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z with your host, Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse. And I'd love you to visit our website at naturalnurse.com and look on calendar, because people are always getting in touch and we'd love to hear from you asking about how can they join us. And there are so many ways: on online webinars, which we have one coming up on Saturday on that's on autoimmune disease, and that offers 3 CE credits for registered dietitians, such as the one we'll be speaking with today as our guest, nurses, midwives, massage therapists, and acupuncturists. So if you are any of those, you can get your CE credits and find out more about natural remedies for autoimmune disease. And that is fully credited by the Department of Education of Florida Licensing Bureau. So people all over the country actually take advantage of that. And of course, if you're interested in the topic, but you're not a professional with one of those licenses, you are welcome to take the class as well. And there's actually a rate to take it just with no credits, which you may not need, or with credits and extremely reasonable. So please join us. Go to naturalnurse.com and click on calendar. Also, we have lots of free events, like for those of you who are listening live today, tonight at the Oyster Bay Library, we have a free event, which is going to be Herbs of Hallows Eve. All the different mystical traditions and nutritional traditions linked to the common plants that we often think about in terms of Halloween, such as pumpkins and turnips and cinnamon and apples and nuts and all kinds of things, witches and broomsticks. How did that come to be a tradition or a traditional folkloric story? So a lot of information, and it's part of the American Herbalist Guild, which is a national organization that certifies herbalists. And that's where you get a license and certificate called RH. And that's one of the things I do, is take people through the process. By the way, you don't need any specific kind of degree from college to get an RH, although it's lots of work. You can do it independently, taking this class and that class and accumulating hours of studying specifically herbal medicine. So to get an RH, there is a specific program. It's granted by the American Herbalist Guild. And once you get your RH, you are a registered herbalist. And that is someone who is recognized as a highly qualified herbalist. In fact, in those kinds of health insurance plans where they'll pay for something that isn't necessarily covered by health insurance, and you see an herbalist, those plans will often reimburse you as long as you're seeing an RH, a registered herbalist, or someone else who can be qualified as an herbalist. So for those of you who are interested in studying herbal medicine, that is one of the many paths to a career in natural health. And I do have a full course called Career in Natural Health, and that addresses all the different avenues you might want to use to be someone who is knowledgeable and also does for your living something that has to do with health, herbal medicine, nutrition, homeopathy. And with that, we'd like to introduce our guest today. We are going to talk with Nancy Clark, who is a registered dietitian and also a board certified specialist in sports dietetics. She attended Boston University and is a fellow of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics and the American College of Sports Medicine. As a food coach and nutrition educator, Nancy's clients have included student athletes all the way up to Olympians and members of the Bruins and Celtics. She has been the team nutritionist for the Red Sox, and she has quite a number of books that she has written, including Nancy Clark's Sport Nutrition Guidebook, which has sold over 750,000 copies. Very impressive. So her nutrition advice and photo have actually been on a Wheaties box. And we're so happy to have her here today, right here with us on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. So thank you for joining us today, Nancy.
I just want to clarify, my picture and advice was on the back of the Wheaties box. And
oh, did I say front?
No, you didn't. You just said it was on the Wheaties box, but I just
want
to clarify for your readers.
It's on the Wheaties box. Yes,
it's
it is.
It's on the Wheaties box.
Right. I would say that not everybody's picture has been there, Nancy, so you're allowed to shout that out. It's a big deal. Why don't we go back in time and explain to people, as a child, who were you and what led you to be a sports nutritionist?
As a child, I lived a lot outside, and I was active, grew up on the ocean, did a lot of swimming and biking and, working in the garden and enjoying being outside. And then this sort of evolved into an interest in sports. And when I went away to a boarding school, and there we had to help cooking the meals, so I was doing a lot of quantity cooking, and it's like, I sort of like this, and so I got interested in nutrition, and, you know, as my life evolved, I just wanted to know more about how nutrition and exercise combined, so I got my nutrition degree at Simmons College in Boston, did an internship in dietetics at Mass General Hospital, worked for a bit, and then went back to graduate school at BU, where I combined nutrition with exercise at a time when people hadn't combined them. And so when I first started working as a sports nutritionist, people would say, what do you do, like cook pasta? You know? And through the years, you know, the whole career of sports nutrition has certainly evolved to the point where now most top athletes work with a sports nutritionist, a sports dietitian, and recognize that nutrition is often the missing link in how people feel in terms of energy, performance, and it could be as an athlete or just in this marathon called life.
Well, that was a wonderful path that you described, that where you combined something that I talk about all the time as a coach, that when I work with people who would like to really walk into a profession that supports their interests. And it sounds like you actually did that in an excellent way. And isn't it amazing that the concept of fitness and nutrition were not even combined so long ago? And I think a lot of people still don't really understand that.
That's so true. When I first started, I remember people would joke, and they go, oh, I'm really into sports nutrition. I'm into vitamin C3, chocolate chip cookies. And that was the time when athletic people were on the seafood diet. They saw it, they ate it. And the more I exercise, the hungrier I get, the more I can eat. You know, give me more vitamin C3, chocolate chip cookies. So times have changed. And now people really are connecting the dots, and how food really impacts health, performance, energy. And athletic people have two jobs. And one job is to stay healthy, which is their day-to-day eating. And one job is to perform and to be able to run the New York City Marathon, if that's what they choose to do, or to simply have stronger muscles so that they stay out of the nursing home when they get older. So that my job encompasses a wide span of interest in exercise.
Well, so you do a lot of one-on-one, but you also, you know, have a big public presence because you have all this information in one of your books, sold 750,000 copies. That's very impressive. And you're in your sixth printing, so people must actually really love that book.
You know, I am very proud of my sports nutrition guidebook, and I think what makes me proud is that it sold so many copies through a grassroots effort that I've never had a publicist or, anyone that's, you know, an agent or anything like that, but it's just people read it and they like it and they recommend it to others and say, this has been so helpful, even non-athletic people, because we're all in this, you know, marathon of life. And we all need to know how to have more energy and how to eat healthfully. So the book includes sections on just day-to-day eating. How do you manage the American food supply? What about breakfast? What about lunch? What about snack attacks? What about eating out? And so it addresses all those, you know, day-to-day eating questions. It has a section on sports nutrition, fueling up, fueling during, refueling afterwards. What about supplements and sports foods? Has a very strong section on weight management because so many people exercise as a means to manage their weight and look at weight management and also dieting that's gone awry because so much of sports nutrition one-on-one is really dealing with people that are really frustrated. I'm doing all this exercise. Why aren't I losing weight? And eating disorders is a large part of sports nutrition. Then the book also has a section with yummy recipes, you know, quick and easy, designed for people that don't like to cook, and family-friendly, healthy foods. So my sports nutrition guidebook really suits the needs of, you know, a whole spectrum. And mom said, my teenage son spent the weekend reading your book.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, and other senior citizens say, I read your book. I'm not an athlete, but boy, I got a lot out of it. So, like I say, I'm just pleased that it's been able to help a lot of people.
Well, I am too, and I think it's beautifully, you know, done and offered to the public. But let's talk a little bit in specifics. For instance, what is the difference between sports nutrition and regular nutrition? You're kind of saying, you know, in some ways, no, because it's widely usable in terms of the concepts.
Correct. As humans, you know, we like to have energy. We like to live an active lifestyle and enjoy, you know, going for a walk or working in the garden or vacuuming the house or whatever your activity might be. So just as humans in our day-to-day living, to have more energy, you want to be thinking about food as fuel. As an athlete, I really impress the fact that food is fuel, and you're either fueling up or you are refueling. As I mentioned earlier, an athletic person has two jobs. One is to be healthy, and if they get injured, to heal quickly. And the other job is to be able to perform, you know, at their best, if that's what they choose to do. So that sports nutrition really is an offshoot of regular day-to-day healthy eating for the average person who wants to excel in the marathon of life.
So that's true, you know, and or someone like, let's say my mom. My mom is, God bless her, 90 plus years old, and she swims every day, walks every day, does weights every day. You know, she hasn't stopped ever. And she really feels, and my dad, who's 93, that they really feel like staying moving and eating very little has worked for them. And I would have to add, they also have vodka every evening, a couple of drinks around 5 o'clock, and they fight a lot in their, you know, couplehood of 70 years. So I guess that works for them. God bless them. But it's interesting to see, you know, how different people manage that. What would you say?
And how different people age, and the fact that they have stayed young and kept moving. It's called use it or lose it. You know, they've taken people in a nursing home, 90-year-olds that are in the nursing home, start them on a weightlifting program to strengthen their muscles, and they no longer need the walker. They can take themselves to the bathroom in the middle of the night. So there's at no age should you say, oh, I'm too old to start exercise. And working, you know, with a trainer can often be helpful for older people so that they get the support that they need to learn how to lift weights if that's something that they've never done before. But congrats to your parents. They've got their role models.
God bless them. And you have to figure, you know, whatever that lifestyle choice is, because they're not related to each other, right? So you can't just put it off to genetics.
Correct. I mean, use it or lose it, use it or lose it. And that's a choice. And the thing is that people who use their bodies and keep them strong and fuel them wisely, they have more fun when they get older. I mean, compare the fun that your parents have to those that are in the nursing home.
God and bless, you're right, yes.
Yeah, what's good for the heart is good for the brain. So hopefully your parents are sharp as tacks.
Oh, they're still, you know, right there. So I want you to go into a little bit of discussion about what is the difference that would make sports nutrition different on some way than regular nutrition.
Well, what makes sports nutrition different is that if you want to, well, let's just take, for example, say you're running the New York City Marathon. That's coming up in a couple of weeks, and there'll be thousands of people that are running it. They really need to pay attention to when they eat and what they eat. In order to fuel running 26.2 miles, but also all the training that leads up to that, they need to fuel their muscles with the right balance of grains and fruits and vegetables, carbohydrates, and protein. So carbohydrates fuel the muscles, and protein builds and repairs the muscles. So before going out on a run, they want to fuel up with the carbohydrates. And after the run, after their training, they want to have some protein to build and repair their muscles and carbs to refuel their muscles. So it's teaching people the right balance and when to eat so that the food really works to their advantage. You know, many times some people think, oh, you shouldn't eat before you exercise.
You know, and what do you say about that?
I say, well, you'll actually have a lot more fun if you do eat before you exercise because you'll have more energy. You know, when you have a car, you put gas in it and it goes. You have a body, you put food in it. It goes a lot more enjoyably and goes longer for greater, you know, endurance. But there are lots of myths of, food will just sit in your stomach, it won't do any good, it'll just cause, you know, cramping. And the stomach is trainable so that, you know, if you are doing exercise, you do want to eat a little bit of something. Maybe it's a half an English muffin. You know, maybe you build that up to, depending on how, if you're training for the marathon, if you're going out for an 18-mile run, you need to have an English muffin with peanut butter and a banana and a latte. So it's really looking at how to get the most energy out of the food, looking at when you eat. Meal timing is very important with sports nutrition and the balance of the carbs and the proteins. Also, people are concerned about building muscle. So sports nutrition goes into protein, and there's this myth that, oh, if you eat a steak for dinner, you have a bigger bicep by breakfast. So I spend time when I work with my clients looking at how much protein does the body actually require? You know, how do you get that through the food that you're eating? Do you really need that protein supplement, or can you just have, a piece of chicken with your dinner? But it's looking at food as fuel and not just food as one of life's pleasures.
Well, yeah, so that you're doing it conscious choice. And while we're talking about some foods that are healthy, let me ask you this. I hear a lot of debates on this topic in terms of if someone who has chosen to be a really strict vegan can also excel at sports.
For certain, vegans can excel because they can eat a diet that provides all the protein and amino acids that their body requires. But the real question is, do they choose that diet? There are different kinds of vegans. So when I work with my clients one-on-one, say if someone comes in to me and says, you know, I'm thinking about becoming a vegan, can I be a, you know, continue to be a good athlete? I will look at, why do you want to be a vegan? And some of them for ethical reasons, some for environmental reasons, some just because it's trendy and it's like, oh, you know, it's the right thing to do. Other times people do it for health reasons. So I have to sort of understand where they're coming from. But I would look at their lifestyle. Being vegan isn't just a diet, it's a lifestyle. And some vegans, you can have a vegan diet that's, you know, potato chips and Skittles and, you know, bagels, and that's a vegan diet, but is it a healthy vegan diet? So I help people get the right balance of protein so that they just don't have a bagel, they have bagel plus peanut butter and, you know, a soy milk latte. They don't just have a salad, they have a salad with beans and, you know, some hummus and crackers on the side. They just don't have a plate of stir-fried veggies and brown rice for dinner. They put in, you know, a chunk of tofu along with it. So the balanced vegan diet requires planning, food shopping, cooking, and being responsible. So as long as a person is responsible and eating regularly throughout the day, having protein throughout the day, it's called protein pacing, then they can certainly excel as a vegan or a vegetarian athlete. They can, but do they? So that's the choice that they need to make.
Right, and that's very good information. I want to remind our listeners that we are joined today by Nancy Clark. She is a RD and a CSSD. Tell us what a CSSD is, Nancy.
A CSSD stands for Certified, as in Board Certified Specialist in Sports Dietetics. So there's a specialty exam that I took. You need to have a few years of experience, and then you can take this specialty exam. To really, it just signifies that I have the knowledge that's needed to work with sports active people. Now you can also become specialized in pediatric nutrition or renal nutrition, specialized in diabetes, and it's like, boy, I could never pass those exams, but I have the knowledge required to work with athletic people.
It's a specialist in athletics. So we're going to take a little break right here, Nancy, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about some very specific dietary suggestions that you can share with our audience, whether they're interested in being just a fitness somebody involved in fitness for themselves, or just, you know, staying home and being healthy. That's good too, as well as competitive athletes. So we will be right back with more, and our guest today is Nancy Clark. You can find out more at nancyclarkrd.com. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the ancient Chinese science and art of acupuncture.
Acupuncture is a 5,000-year-old medical procedure involving insertion and manipulation of needles into specific points on the body. It is often applied to relieve pain during surgery and for many other conditions.
Acupuncture needles have been found in China that are over 4,000 years old. The first needles were made of stone. Later, bronze, gold, or silver was used, and today they are usually made from steel. Acupuncture was developed around the theory of special meridian points on the body connected to the internal organs, and that vital energy, or qi, flows along these meridians. According to this theory, diseases are caused by interrupted energy flow, and the stimulation of these points restores normal energy circulation. There is some scientific evidence of the existence of the meridians as a separate circulatory system. Studies were done in the 1970s by a Dr. Kim from Korea, where he injected radioactive dyes into the traditional acupuncture points. He observed migration of the dyes along the exact predicted path of the meridians.
Okay. How acupuncture works remains uncertain, but both Western and Eastern scientific studies on rabbits have shown that the analgesic effects are not simply a matter of suggestion. After the discovery in 1975 of endorphins, natural pain inhibitors in the body, Some neurophysiologists suggested that the needles may trigger the release of these substances. American and Chinese studies have confirmed that placing acupuncture needles in the brains of dogs raises the level of endorphins in the spinal fluid.
Acupuncture is used today in most hospitals in China and by many private practitioners in virtually every country in the world, including the United States. The primary use is for analgesia, although ulcers, hypertension, asthma, and other conditions have been documented to respond favorably to this treatment. Chinese surgeons prefer acupuncture to the use of drug-induced analgesia because they claim it does not disturb normal body physiology and therefore does not make the patient vulnerable to shock. Brain surgery is especially amenable to this form of analgesia when it is necessary to keep the patient awake during the operation.
Although some modifications in the practice of acupuncture have been made, such as sometimes using a small electric current on the needle instead of the traditional twirling, acupuncture remains intact as an ancient therapeutic technique that has been used successfully for at least 5,000 years. Perhaps you'd like to add this piece of knowledge to your natural medicine chest.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We are right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We'd love you to join us. Come on board naturalnurse.com, click on calendar, and you will find all the classes and workshops that we're up and coming where you can join with us online or on ground. If you're local, come to the Oyster Bay Library tonight around 6:30, and we'll be doing a presentation on herbs for Halloween, how to integrate them into your holiday festivities. And we have a class coming up in a few days that actually has CE credits for registered dietitians, nurses, acupuncturists, and other health professionals. So you can look for that one, and that's online. So you can take that from anywhere that you live, anywhere in the world. And you can take the class live if it works for you. I think it's Sunday morning around 9:30 a.m. But if that doesn't work for you, once you register for the course, we send you it as an archive once we finish it live, and you still get your 3 CE credits. So I'd like to invite you to join us. Today we are having as our guest Nancy Clark, RD, CSSD, registered dietitian and board certified specialist in sports dietetics. She attended Boston University and is a fellow of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics and the American College of Sports Medicine. She is the author of Nancy Clark's Sports Nutrition Guidebook in its 6th printing. So she's certainly not new to this topic. So thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
I was on your website, Nancy, and this is nancyclarkrd.com, and I see you have an article about the new, well, I'll call it kind of fake meatless meat. So I didn't read the article, so why don't you tell us your take on that whole new phenomena?
Oh, the faux burgers.
Okay, good name.
Yeah. No, it caught my attention. It's like, is this a good thing or a bad thing? It really depends. There are options for vegans or vegetarians who are not wanting to eat animal foods, and there's something called, you know, the Impossible Burger or Beyond Burger, and it's like, are these highly processed foods better than eating, you know, beef from cattle? So the article just sort of explains what these products are and, you know, the pros and cons of them. If you're an environmentalist, you might who likes meat, it would be an alternative to have a lower meat with a lower environmental impact. But if you're a purist, it's a highly processed food. And does a faux meat, a faux burger, really, does it fit into an all-natural diet? So there's not a right or a wrong to it. And I was talking to someone who's vegan and asked her if she'd had one of these, fake burgers. And she said no, but she wasn't. Part of the reason why she's vegan is that she's not really attracted to beef in the first place.
The taste of it, you mean?
The taste of it. But she said, if she was going to a barbecue and she wanted to fit in, that she might bring one of these, fake burgers just so that she could have a burger like everybody else was having a burger.
Well, I like your name for it. And what I've been doing, Nancy, and I'm sure you do this sometimes too, as you said, that we're not going to talk about one brand or another. They have all different names, and it's a whole phenomenon of flooding the marketplace right now, and it's being promoted even by all the fast food places as their, vegetarian choice, as if that means it's healthy. And I have been reading those paragraph of ingredients that I'm sure you often do in terms of food, and I would way prefer to have something that says, like organic buffalo grass-fed, then this paragraph, and not only that, from the research that I did, they seem to have invented some kind of molecule that tricks your taste buds into thinking it's a heme molecule. In other words, it's a fake blood flavor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so then they're putting in all kinds of other flavoring agents depending on the thing. They're promoting it as plant-based as if that means all natural and healthy. It is plant-based in that it doesn't have meat, but it's loaded with chemicals and fillers and all kinds of molecules that people might be highly allergic to and wouldn't even know they're eating it when they're just thinking they're eating plants, which is not really all that's in there.
I think it's called the power of marketing.
Right.
And there are buzzwords. When you look at the labels of these packages, they have all the buzzwords. Plant-based, non-GMO, organic, vegetarian. And so the marketing, it's amazing what you can market. I remember when bottled water first came out, it's like, who's going to pay money for bottled water? And it's like, no, they marketed it, and now it's this huge industry. I take my hat off to the food marketing industry, but I think you want to go back to your core values and, closer to the earth, less processed, nature-made is certainly the way that I would like to feed my body and encourage other people to feed their bodies.
Me too. So I really like foods that don't even have a label on them, like paragraph-free eating, like no paragraphs on anything. That's how my house is. There's not a paragraph in my house in terms of something that would relate to food. So what does that mean? That means I have nothing processed, nothing in a box, nothing packaged. Other than, I must say, I do have organic rice cakes that are in a bag. Those, when you read the side, it says ingredients, brown rice, comma, nothing. there's no paragraph at all. So I really am not a big fan of those burgers. And I actually have gotten feedback from my really staunch vegan clients, which I also don't think is usually the best choice in terms of a diet for most people. And by the way, I do, and I'm not sure if you ever talk about that, I actually do blood work. I think everybody should have this blood work. It's not often covered by health insurance. Where you just get a snapshot of where you are with all your micronutrients rather than take handfuls of pills. I think it's much better to get this test done. I actually think it should be standard of practice so everybody knows what their values are of these micronutrients. And then you can choose foods that fill in what you're missing. And if that doesn't work, then go to supplementation. What is your feeling about taking, handfuls and handfuls of pills, which certainly many sports enthusiasts do?
I think we're on the same page there. My job as a registered dietitian is to teach people how to get the nutrients that they need through the food that they're eating. So I have clients that come in, they bring these grocery bags filled with all these pills, and they take them out. And I ask them, why are they taking them? My friend said, why are you taking that? Oh, my friend is selling this. Why are you taking this? Oh, somebody, I read about it somewhere. And so they're just sort of, you know, guessing as to what they're doing. And like you say, you want a knowledge base if you're taking supplements. So I teach people how to get what they need. In working with athletes, a lot of them are taking protein supplements, and they want to know, like, how many more of these do I need? And what I do is I estimate their protein needs based on your body weight, and figure out exactly how many grams of protein does your body require. If someone's on a reducing diet, their protein needs go up. As people get older, their protein needs increase. When someone's just started an exercise program and just starting lifting weights, they might need a little bit more protein. So look at their protein needs based on their lifestyle and their activity levels and figure out how can they get that through food. And most of these people are astonished. It's like, oh, I can get that all from food, and I don't need these protein powders and protein shakes and protein bars. And food has all of these, and protein and all these natural foods have these synergistic effects. They're the things that aren't in pills and powders and potions. There are all these bioactive compounds that work together. For example, if you have a whole egg, say if you were to have 20 grams of protein from 3 whole eggs versus 20 grams of protein from 6 egg whites, just having the whole eggs, it's 40% more powerful in terms of building muscle protein synthesis than the egg whites. That, again, this is just an example of how whole foods work. It's amazing how nature has them have all these synergistic effects.
Yeah, and there's definitely nutrients in whole eggs that are not found in egg whites. So you're actually missing, you know, a lot of the really healthy nutritional components. And then it could be overdone as well. So, you know, certainly walking in balance is a great way to go. Let me ask you this. I have several gentlemen who were in their, I was going to say 60s, but guess what? Now they're in their 70s. Wow, that 10 years went fast. I'm thinking of my husband in particular, who actually works out every day and is in beautiful, excellent shape for 72, but has been complaining to me that even though he's on his same regimen, he's noticing he has much less muscle mass. And that really bothers him. But I would say, is that normal? You know, he's read these things about taking hormone shots. He doesn't really want to do that. What's been your experience with that as men and women get older?
Well, we know that as people age, they can very easily lose muscle. That's where strength training comes in. So I'd like to think that your husband is lifting weights and doing resistance exercise. I would also make sure that he's getting adequate protein paced evenly throughout the day. Sometimes people eat, you know, a piece of salmon at nighttime. They might have oatmeal for breakfast and some vegetable soup for lunch and, you know, an apple for a snack, and then a big piece of salmon or chicken or protein at night. But a dose of protein lasts for about 4 hours in terms of building muscle. So it's important to have some protein in each of your meals. So if you're having oatmeal for breakfast, you want to make sure that you cook it in milk and add some nuts to it. If you're having a salad at lunch, you want to make sure that you have some cottage cheese or beans or chicken in it as well as a source of protein. You know, instead of having just an apple, you have apple and cheese, or not just a banana, you have banana and peanut butter. And then at dinner, instead of having this great big piece of salmon, you've divided it, the protein in that, more evenly throughout the day. So protein pacing is important, particularly as people get older.
Now, is it possible or even normal to actually be able to maintain that muscle mass, you know, as you get into your 70s? I mean, versus like when he was in his 20s and 40s?
I think a lot of that would depend on his testosterone levels, which probably drop with age.
Right.
He can do the best that he can do, and that's the best you can do.
Right, and I mention also embracing the change. I mean, you know, for 72, he looks fantastic. With this whole anti-aging, you know, that's another one of those big popular things nowadays. I myself am in that same decade as my husband, and I'm really happy with graceful aging. I don't expect to be exactly the same as when I was 25.
And that is a wiser path than fighting it. And, you know, there's wisdom that comes with aging. There's grace, there's beauty. And so I'm like you. I mean, I'm proud of it and proud that my body can do all that it can do. And I would like to think your husband is proud that his body can do all that it can do. So
it drives him crazy
no shame.
When people will say to him, you know, because he is really in very good shape, they'll say to him, "Oh, you're really lucky."
Well,
and he says,
lucky.
I exercise every day and I walk 5 miles and I don't eat, I restrict my eating to certain foods and only have a dessert on the weekend. You know, that's why I'm lucky, not just that I'm lucky. So,
and it's a lifestyle, it's a choice, and he's chosen to be able to have more fun as he gets older.
Oh, that's a good way to put it. That is a good way to put it. And I imagine you share a lot of tips on how to stay in good shape, you know, as we do move forward in time. And, you know, you talk about something like food guide for marathoners. Would that be a different food than for someone else who's training for a different sport?
Marathoners tend to be very weight conscious. They think, oh, the lighter I am, the faster I'll run. So weight is a huge issue among runners. Most people look at these runners and think, oh, they're just so thin, they eat whatever they want. But actually, they tend to be very diet conscious. So the question is, how do you have energy to exercise and maintain a lean physique? And also, you know, the quantity of food that's needed. So there's a lot of conversation about what to eat, when to eat, and how to maintain a lean physique while still maintaining your energy for exercise. So I do have a food guide for marathoners, as you mentioned, and you know that information is also in the newest edition of my sports nutrition guidebook. But marathoners are people, and as people, marathoners eat more calories, need more fluid, probably a little bit more salt to replace what's lost in sweat, and have to pay more attention to fueling up and refueling. But I look at people as marathoners as people and their lifestyle, and figure out how can they fuel for their sport that in a way that fits into their lifestyle. And this is where nutrition is such a one-on-one conversation. And we try to speak in generalities, but it always comes back to it's always a good idea to work one-on-one with a registered dietitian.
Right, because it's so individualized. Well, we're going to take a little break right here to have a station promo. You know, you're listening to us right here on PRN.FM, Progressive Radio Network. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse at naturalnurse.com. Our guest today is Nancy Clark, registered dietitian, and we will be right back with more.
I'm Gary Nall, the founder of the Progressive Radio Network. Today we have more than 80 producers bringing forth the most progressive and most liberating information, the kind of information you do not regularly hear on any of the mainstream or alternative media. You can help us now. Up to this point, I have virtually supported the Progressive Radio Network, all of its expenses and payroll, myself. But we would like to expand our reach. We'd like to do far more. We'd like to be able to Advertise on Facebook and let others know we exist. We are the number one progressive radio network in the world. In fact, we have programs that are most listened to in all of progressive radio. But we could go a lot further. Our message could reach a lot more people, especially at a time when people are desperate for honest, objective insights on the important topical issues of our day. How can you help? It's simple. Go to prn.fm, go to our main page. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little button, Support Now. And then whatever you can contribute on a monthly basis will make a big difference. It will help get the message out. It will help inform more people, give them more choices. This is where you'll hear in the independent candidates and the people looking to challenge the corruption in government and industries. But we need to get our reach out further. So please, whatever you can afford on a monthly basis, and there's some suggestions there, and it'll be automatic. All right, thank you very much for continuing to help us help you and the rest of the world on these important issues.
And welcome back to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, right here on Progressive Radio Network. Thank you so much for joining us. We have over 300,000 people that are downloading our podcast. That's really wonderful. We love to hear from you. And our guest today is Nancy Clark, RD, CSSD. And we're talking a lot about sort of, you know, natural food eating. She has a wonderful book called Nancy Clark's Sports Nutrition Guidebook. And you can find it on her website and I imagine other places as well. And she also has been featured on the back of the Wheaties box. So she is really well recognized for being an expert in sports nutrition. And thank you so much for joining us today, Nancy.
Well, thank you for this kind invitation.
Now, let me ask you what your feeling is about sports drinks and electrolytes.
Sports drinks and electrolytes have a time and a place in an athlete's diet. But for a fitness exerciser, probably not so important. So if we take, let's say the New York City Marathon's coming up, and I imagine a lot of people know people that are marathoners. The sports drinks are designed for people that are exercising for more than an hour and an hour and a half. They contain carbohydrate energy to help to maintain energy during a long run. They contain a little bit of sodium, not so much to replace the sweat losses of sodium, but it enhances fluid absorption and retention. So that a sports drink is designed for people that do endurance exercise. Do kids in school need a sports drink in their lunchbox? I don't think so. Does the fitness exerciser need to be drinking a sport drink during their, 30-minute treadmill run? I don't think so. So the many times these products are advertised to the general public because that makes for more sales. But the reality is they're really designed for people that do a lot of endurance exercise if they're out there for more, like, say, an hour, hour and a half, and need to maintain their blood sugar levels and energy to get through 2, 3, 4 hours of running a marathon.
So you're thinking they're, overhyped.
Overhyped. But for an athlete, like say, there's a time and a place. But there are a lot of fitness exercises. Like I had this one guy come into my office and he was drinking this sports drink at 9 in the morning. I knew he didn't work out until like 4 in the afternoon. And I said, I'm just sort of curious, why are you drinking this now? And he said, he sort of stopped and thought, Then he said, for the electrolytes. And then admitted, I don't even know what electrolytes are. And so he was just, an uneducated consumer. In terms of electrolytes, food is loaded with electrolytes. Electrolytes are electrically charged particles, more commonly called minerals, like sodium, potassium, calcium. And the American food supply is loaded with sodium. In fact, there's a public health campaign to eat less salt. But, you know, the sports drink people come along and sort of put the word electrolyte on a silver platter. And here, would you like some electrolytes? And people think that they're really positive. And for an athlete who's very, very sweaty, you know, it can be a good idea. But for this guy that was sitting in my office at 9 o'clock in the morning drinking this drink for electrolytes, he would have gotten a lot more out of a piece of toast and peanut butter. So that's part of my job as a sports nutritionist, to educate people what's in food and that food is loaded with electrolytes.
So let me ask you this. As we have moved forward in history, there's certainly even government testing of, let's say, the nutritional tables that we find on. A good website I use is the USDA website. I don't know if you have another suggestion for looking at what foods contain which nutrients. But sometimes if those measurements were done, let's say, way back in the 1950s, like when I was born, those nutrients still are not necessarily in those foods due to the change of environmental and soil conditions and that kind of thing. So how do we find out what the real number is? And is there any worry that the nutrient in foods has gone down over time?
Well, from my knowledge, if the nutrients have gone down, it's by a little bit. But take a piece of broccoli. A piece of broccoli that's cooked gives you all the vitamin C that you need for the day. So instead of having one piece of broccoli, you have two pieces of broccoli. You get double the amount of vitamin C. So is there a significant loss? So we really kind of have to look at the nutrient and what the concern is. But in general, if you eat a lot of nutrient-rich fruits and vegetables and whole grains, you'll be able to get what it is that you're needing. And it goes back to, you know, having the more natural foods than the ultra-processed foods. So I think that it's processing that probably, my bigger concern would be the processing than, it's my understanding that if a food doesn't, like you don't have an orange that's low in vitamin C, you just have fewer oranges. So that it's the yield that's affected more than the nutritional quality. But it depends on the mineral that you're looking at. So
some things. Like I have heard, for instance, magnesium has been depleted quite a bit. And I often find that people might have symptoms like night leg cramps, even though they're eating a healthy diet. And when they use a magnesium supplement such as magnesium glycinate, they absolutely get relief from that. So even though they felt they were eating foods that normally would be listed as being high in magnesium, and then, of course, we test the levels and we find out that, in fact, they don't have it. So I would say, you know, it's some kind of concern, but certainly just eating, like you're recommending, Nancy, a whole lot of healthy foods and leave off the junk. What is your favorite program for weight loss if somebody, you know, how do you feel about going gluten-free, for instance?
Well, if a person has celiac disease, then certainly gluten-free would be a wise choice. I, you know, have individual conversations with a person and look at their lifestyle and their likes and what works for them. In general, diets don't work. I mean, if diets worked, then everybody in America would be lean, and that's not the case. I mean, how much of weight has to do anything with food? You know, if you think about it, we've got stress, we've got lack of exercise, we've got, you know, what's endocrine disruptors in the food. We've got an environment that is obesogenic. I mean, there are so many factors that relate to weight. So the focus is on food, but we really have to look holistically, which I think that's probably a large part of your focus as well. But my job is to teach people how to eat healthfully, how to eat appropriately, how to eat evenly throughout the day according to their circadian rhythms. And when you have to trust that when you eat appropriately and exercise appropriately, your body kind of gravitates to an appropriate weight. So it's not a diet that works, it's a person that works. And they work to push themselves away from the dinner table just a little bit sooner than later, and to consume just a little bit less at the end of the day. So if anything, I teach people how to eat, and then at dinner just chip away a little bit so they eat a little bit less, and they lose weight at night when they're sleeping. But the standard pattern is get up in the morning and diet at breakfast and diet at lunch and then get too hungry and blow it at night. Then get up the next day, diet breakfast, diet lunch, blow it at night. Get up the next day, blew my diet again, diet breakfast, diet lunch, blow it at night. Or people are good on Monday, good on Tuesday, kind of good Wednesday, not so good Thursday, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So those are the patterns that I try to correct to get people fueling during the day and eating breakfast and eating lunch. I even give them a second lunch, change that word snack to second lunch, so you're eating quality food, and then they eat a little bit less at nighttime. But it's just chipping away, fueling by day, having plenty of energy to exercise, to get to the gym, and then dieting at night by eating just a little bit less, but not by starving.
So you're talking about something like portion control rather than necessarily leaving off all of wheat products or something.
Precisely, precisely. And let people choose what it is that they want. I mean, if you deny people of something, for example, pretend you have a room full of toys and you're babysitting for this little four-year-old boy, and you bring him into this room full of toys and say, you can play with all of these toys, but just don't touch that green truck.
Oh, yeah.
Then you leave the room and you look through the two-way mirror, and what's he doing? He's playing with a green truck.
First choice, right?
Yeah. So if you tell people don't eat this or don't eat that, it just magnifies the power of that food. So I give people, in my sports nutrition guidebook, I help people estimate how many calories do they deserve to eat, you know, just to maintain weight, and what's a good amount to lose weight. And most people are dieting way too hard. They're cutting back way too much, getting too hungry. And you will never win the war against hunger, because hunger is physiological. And when people get too hungry, they'll not only eat, but they'll overeat. So I'm sort of anti-diet and very much pro-eating and fueling an active lifestyle, and then just eating a little bit less at the end of the day.
Well, those wonderful suggestions. And for more specific information, people can visit NancyClarkRD.com and see her wonderful book, Nancy Clark's Sports Nutrition Guidebook. 750,000 people can't be wrong. It's an excellent resource for you and your family to move into healthy eating so that you can just feel great no matter what age you are. So thank you so much for being our guest today, Nancy.
Well, this is my pleasure. Thank you for helping to spread a lot of good information.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us once again right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z on PRN.FM, Progressive Radio Network. And until next time, this is your host, Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse at naturalnurse.com, along with my co-host, Dr. Eugene Samperone. We are hoping that you stay healthy.